Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 12, entitled Birth of Emperor Parikshit, Text 26.
Rajarsinam Janaita
Shasta
Chutpata Gamina Nigrahita Kalesha
Of kings as good as sages.
Janayita,
producer.
Shasta,
chastiser.
Cha,
end.
Utpatagamina,
of the upstarts.
Nigrahita,
molester.
Ade,
of the coral, of the quarrelsome.
Esha,
this.
Buha,
of the world.
Dharmasya,
of religion.
Karana,
on account of.
Translation. This child will be the father of kings who will be like sages. For world peace and for the sake of religion, he will be the chastiser of the upstarts and the quarrelsome.
Purport.
The wisest man in the world is a devotee of the Lord. The sages are called wise men, and there are different types of wise men for different branches of knowledge. Unless therefore the king or the head of the state is the wisest man, he cannot control all types of wise men in the state. In the line of royal succession in the family of Maharaj Yudhisthira, all the kings, without exception, were the wisest men of their times. And so also it is foretold about Maharaj Parikshit and his son, Janamejaya, who was yet to be born. Such wise kings can become chastisers of upstarts and uprooters of Kali, or quarrelsome elements. As will be clear in the chapters ahead, Maharaj Parikshit wanted to kill the personified Kali who was attempting to kill a cow, the emblem of peace and religion. The symptoms of Kali are 1. Wine, 2. Women, 3. Gambling, and 4. Slaughterhouses. Wise rulers of all states should take lessons from Maharaj Parikshit in how to maintain peace and morality. By subduing the upstarts and quarrelsome people who indulge in wine as a connection with women, gambling and meat eating, supplied by regularly maintained slaughterhouses. In this age of Kali, regular license is issued for maintaining all of these different departments of quarrel. So how can they expect peace and morality in the state? The state fathers therefore must follow the principles of becoming wiser by devotion to the Lord, by chastising the breaker of discipline, and by uprooting the symptoms of quarrel as mentioned above. If we want blazing fire, we must use dry fuel. Blazing fire and moist fuel go ill together. Peace and morality can prosper only by the principles of Maharaj Parikshit and his followers.
Oja Timandasya Yanandana Salakya Chakshurunitam Yena Tasmai Si Gurude Namaha Shri Chaitanya Vastam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayarupa Kadamayam Dharati Svatantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaurabhadana Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
To be wise is different from being intelligent. Because wisdom means that one knows the goal of life and the purpose of life. Whereas intelligence means that one is able to analyze situations and calculate advantage. Of course, intelligence without wisdom is not favorable at all. Such intelligence is only causing havoc and disturbance. And in one sense, therefore, that is not intelligent. Right? It's not intelligent when one acts in a way that it causes disturbance. Like modern man is kind of looking upon the historical man as nice, but not so developed. Right? I mean, just now we have the best standard of education we ever had. Just now, coincidentally, really, just now we have the best, the most sophisticated standard of life we ever had. Just now, we know more answers to more questions than mankind ever knew before. Just now, coincidentally, mankind is at its peak of civilization. We just happen to take birth at this time. Just now. And this is what we are supposed to believe. However, we can see that actually our knowledge, right, is very vast nowadays. We know so much. It's like a continent of knowledge, right? But our continent of knowledge is a drifting continent of knowledge. That means we are gaining knowledge in one area and we're losing it on the other side. Who knows the science of herbs like our ancestors did? Right? Very rare. Very rare. People used to know. I was sitting in a dentist chair and the dentist was about to remove a bad tooth. Right? And I was thinking, and it says in the Bhagavatam that there is a herb, and if you just touch this herb to the tooth, all the bacteria will go. And I thought, if only I would know the herb. Meanwhile, the dentist was putting on his rubber gloves and getting for his nefarious activities. And yeah, what to do? I don't know what the herb is. So simple things like that are forgotten, right? All forgotten. So it's not that we are now so knowledgeable and previously they didn't know anything. They know so many things that we don't know. And like this, in this way, we have not made any progress. Knowledge has simply shifted in another area, that is all. And in fact, our culture, man is certainly not on the height of intelligence because there is very little wisdom in our culture. Is it, like I give the example from time to time, I like this example, that if I invite you for lunch, next to the pepper and salt shaker, I put a spray can with Doom. Doom is great stuff for getting rid of all kinds of insects, cockroaches and whatever. Right? Put it right next to the pepper and salt, just so that when we get ready for our prasadam, that we can add, according to taste, some salt, or we can add some of the spray. That's not kind of like, you know, has he gone crazy? No. I know it is crazy. There is no need to put that spray can on the table because all the vegetables are already pre-sprayed. just think about it, you know. I mean, and this is intelligence. We are so sophisticated that now we can get rid of so many insects. Yes, and in the process we get rid of ourselves as well. I mean, call that intelligence. So if our society now is the most exalted, most intelligent society that has ever been on the planet, then we are in total illusion. total illusion.
And we understand that instead of an evolution, instead of a development and man getting more and more sophisticated, there is a devolution. It's going down. So Darwin taught us a theory that from monkeys, that monkeys turned into man. But actually, if you really look at Darwin's theory a little more accurately, then you'll see that in fact, what his theory is doing, it is turning man into monkeys. Because that theory is basically denying the existence of God. And therefore, all morality goes out of the window. And the result is that man, indeed, starts to behave like a monkey. Dharmena hina pasuriyusa samana. Without Dharma, man comes to the animal platform. So you can see, Dharma really, instead of giving us a theory from where monkeys turned into man, has found a way to turn man into monkeys. So like that, we can appreciate that wisdom is something else. Wisdom is when one understands how to preserve the goal of life at all times, to give priority to the goal of life. We see in the Krishna book, it's another passage I like, where Bhumasura is in this fort. He has this city and it has like walls of gas. Don't ask me how, but walls of gas and big electric fences and all these things. So very high-tech modern security arrangements. And then it is mentioned that like in Vedic times, in other words, electricity was known. It's not that they didn't know about it, but they didn't use it. It was the demons only that would use such things. Electricity was considered to be demoniac. And now there is an ever increasing need for electricity. The power grid is just exponentially growing and growing, and we need more power plants, more and more. And in fact, with traditional means, it will not be possible to meet the demand of the world, and therefore we are governments of the world constructing more and more nuclear power plants. I never liked nuclear power plants. I always had this sort of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, the batteries have gone again. So I never liked nuclear power plants that much, and one time a devotee who was an engineer in a nuclear power plant drove me to the airport. So I took advantage of the opportunity and gave him a cross examination. Alright, how many nuclear power plants are there in the world? 350. Okay, what are you guys doing with the nuclear waste? There is more nuclear waste than we can dispose of. Yes, that is true. We are producing about twice as much nuclear waste as we can legally dispose of. Right. I said, what about legally disposing? Who has determined what is a safe amount to be disposed of? The World Health Organization. I said, how do they know? I said, they don't know. I said, I heard that they put the radioactive material in barrels, and that they put a block of concrete around these drums and then throw it in the ocean. But isn't it a fact that concrete, right, has a duration of life of somewhere between 80 and 120 years, if it's good quality, according to engineers. Yes, that is true. Isn't it true that this radioactive material
stays first grade toxic for 50,000 years and second grade toxic for 300,000 years. First grade gives you immediate heavy symptoms of radioactivity exposure, such as leukemia, and hair will start falling out and all these wonderful things. Second grade is sort of slowly mutating the species, and you get fish with three heads and other such wonderful things, or human beings with. He says, yes. And they're just throwing it in the ocean. So he said, what do you do with the extra nuclear waste? Oh, well, you know, we manipulate the books and we throw some on the last day of the year and some on the new day of the year. And then it's so close that, you know, we just book it all, we book in the new year, and this way we throw double. We throw double into the oceans. Okay. I said, I read an article that in Germany they have discovered 2,000 illegal dumping sites. That's Germany. Why to speak of other countries where they're not so... I asked him, what about a meltdown? I heard that, what about Chernobyl? Can it happen in other places also? There are many precautionary measures, like in our power plant we have a double protection system to cool the nuclear reactor. I go like, well, what if they both break down? What happens then? Well, then, in the unlikely event of that will happen, then there will be a meltdown. It could happen, but we can contain it. Right? We can back the reactor, and then there will be no explosion. Said, but I heard that you can only back the sides and let the radioactive material will eat through the bottom. Well, that is true, but that will last 20 years.
Then what will you do after 20 years?
Not so long in 20 years. Anyway, you can hear the story. So here we are, iPhone, iPad, everything. Yes, yes, yes. All the gadgets in the world. The fact that people have all this equipment, right, is increasing the electricity consumption exponentially, and the Earth is gradually getting destroyed. All right, so much for the news. Ladies and gentlemen, we switch to the other channel now. Krishna went to the forest early in the morning to herd his cows. And the cows were eating the delicious grasses that were naturally growing in the forest. The Yamuna was gently flowing, and the cowherd boys drank the water of the river Yamuna. Their bodies were effulgent and radiating health and beauty, and they took some of the natural fruits that were growing on the trees in the forest. Where are we? We can see that with all our intelligence we have removed ourselves. We have just removed ourselves from the original way of life. The original way of life is Vrindavan. That is where we are at home. That is what the world should look like. If we have a big brainstorming session, like, in what direction should the world go? It's very easy. Vrindavan. Vrindavan, that is where the world should go. The whole world should become like Vrindavan. So it's like, and of course, not like the external Vrindavan, but like the spiritual Vrindavan. But even the external Vrindavan is already much better. I saw the two vehicles were approaching each other, coming from an opposite direction. And it was dark. One of the drivers was nodding off. I said, what's going to happen? No problem. Because even when the drivers fall asleep, the bullocks don't smash into each other. No problem.
Sometimes, in fact, the driver goes, lies down in the back under a blanket, and the bull just walks and goes to the market. He knows where he's going. He's been there so many times. And after, and then in the daytime, you see the bullocks eat and they sleep. And then the owner works. It's teamwork. Right? They don't shift. That's what it is. Right? Simple living on eye thinking. And why not? So in this way, Krishna consciousness is a culture based on wisdom. A culture which is harmonious. We find that in modern philosophy, some of the philosophers in the previous century came up with this concept that man lives in a hostile universe. So, and the answer to it is power. So, that was the philosophy, like in the previous century. Man lives in a hostile universe and the answer is power. And that is the basis of the modern lifestyle. Power. Right? Power is power in dealing with nature. Concrete on top. Spray it. Zap it. Right? Whatever you do. Manipulate it. Adjust it genetically. It is all power. Right? Power. The approach is overpower nature somehow or other. But actually, Vedic culture is in harmony with nature. Yeah. A lifestyle in harmony with nature. Of course, it's hard for us to imagine as we have become attached to the machines. Prabhupada tells the story of a fisherman, maybe from Orissa on the beach. He says, this fisherman was used to sleeping on the beach. He was the poor man. He's sleeping on the beach. And then his prized possession was a basket. His fish basket. And at night, he would put his head on the basket so that no one would steal the basket. And then, this nice fishy smell would be there. And he would go to sleep, yes. So one day, he was visiting a relative. And when he was staying, they had a house. So when he was staying in the house, the relatives, they said, that fishy basket is not coming in the house. No way, the whole house smells. The lady of the house said, no, that thing is not coming in. Yeah. Well, so that night, he couldn't sleep. He missed that fishy smell, you know. So Prabhupada is saying, and modern man is the same. Instead of the basket, modern man always needs a machine for everything. Okay? Everything. For everything we need a machine. Yeah. So, it's interesting. So we don't have a culture based on wisdom. A culture that is helping us to become Krishna conscious. And therefore sometimes we think that we have difficulties in spiritual life. That we are struggling spiritually. Oh, I am weak. I'm struggling so much spiritually. But actually, it's because we live in a society which is basically wrong. And the society makes everything difficult. Society is not designed for chanting 16 rounds. The society is not designed for this. Society is for making money and watching TV, surfing the internet a bit, you know. Driving a nice big car, and that's what it's made for. And then suddenly, 16 rounds. It's not time. It's not designed for 16 rounds. No. You have to work 11 hours, at least. Yeah. I mean, work and traffic and this, that, 11 hours, 12 hours, gone. And then, you know, calculate it. A few hours in the bathroom, calculate it, you know, eating, and, yeah. How much time is left? Yeah. You can chant 16 rounds and you come at home and say, you know, wife says, Hari Bol, how are you? Sorry, no time. Better chant my rounds. But you never talk to the finishing my rounds, you know. You have so much time to talk to everyone, you never talk to me.
you know, a normal scenario of any home domestic theater is always sort of that kind of script. What shall we say?
But look at it, it's just an artificial life. You come in village life, you know, in the village, old Indian village, it is like, you know, they stop you, and they sort of, they talk forever. These little, they talk slow, they take so much time, they talk forever, the whole day. And when you meet someone in the village, it is like, when shall we meet? In the morning, at noon, or in the evening? It's not like, you know, at 5 o'clock, you know, five, okay, five. Hey, you're 10 minutes late.
In the village, chalega. Morning, noon, evening, that is sort of how it is. Because life in a village is slow. You take time. Yeah, put some cabbage in the ground. It takes time to grow. There is no rush. Life is slow.
So I read a thing about Gandhi, and it's a little similar to Prabhupada's idea. Gandhi said that any speed faster than walking is unnatural. It's interesting. It was an interesting concept. And he said, any speed faster than walking is unnatural. And he said, and actually he said, man, by nature, can only relate to a village, right? So now we live in this modern time and we start to get global consciousness. Who can relate to the world? He says, one can only relate to a village. Okay. Point well taken, I think. You know, a food for thought. Point well taken. Anyway, why am I speaking so much in this talk about ecology? I'm not going to carry on with it, but the point is this. I was reading some time ago in a commentary of Baladev Vijayabhusan on the Vedanta Sutra. And in that commentary, he was explaining something about the Gayatri Mantra. And he said, the Gayatri stands on four legs. And he said, three of these legs are mind, body, and words, and the fourth leg is the earth. I thought that was interesting, right? The earth. That on the earth, for Gayatri, for the other three legs to be completely stable, that mind, body, and words can be absorbed in the Supreme Lord, the fourth leg, the earth, is also required. That's why I spent some time on talking about earthly matters. Otherwise, I personally am not so interested in earthly things, to be truthful. I'm more interested in spiritual things. I'm more interested in the spiritual world. I'm actually more interested in that forest of Vrindavan. That forest where Krishna, somehow or other, is roaming on the banks of the Yamuna, attracting his devotees. I'm more interested in that forest and how all these devotees are competing to attract Krishna. Somehow or other, by service. So the entire forest of Vrindavan is just made up of service. The trees are serving. The Yamuna is serving when Krishna places his lotus feet in the Yamuna. The water plants, they hold on to Krishna's feet. They quickly grab Krishna's feet so he can't pull his feet out of that water. And the Yamuna then becomes ecstatic and stops flowing. Because why would it go away if Krishna's lotus feet are there? So the Yamuna, it just stops. The water stops. But there are little whirlpools in the water of ecstasy. So that nice Vrindavan, right, which is completely
based on devotional service.
I want to spend my time with that, remembering that nice Vrindavan, remembering Krishna, and I want to spend my time doing some service. But we can turn away from the world. The sages can turn away from the world and make their own little environment where they sort of live in good conditions. But that is condemned by Prahlad Maharaj. One second, I have to now think the first line again. Doesn't want to come. The verse is explaining Monam Charanti Vijanena Bharata Nista. It is said that we are not concerned. There are those who are taking vows of Monam, who are recluses in the forest, sages that withdraw from the world and live themselves in a sacred environment and spend their time focused on the Lord. But Monam Charanti Vijanena Bharata Nista Naitan Vihaya Muksa Ika. They are only interested in their own liberation. Prahlad Maharaj rejects this.
No.
No. I cannot not do Suprayena Deya Swami Mukti Kama. I can, practically everyone, all these sages only are interested in their own benefit. But I am concerned. I want to deliver all the conditioned souls. I don't want liberation for myself. I want to give it to all others. So this is glorified in Bhagavatam. And therefore our concern is with the earth. And therefore we must have a message to the earth. People are not going to hear from us about Krishna. Some. But most people will run away. You know, Krishna.
Oops, sorry. I'm busy now.
God.
You know, I have here a book about God. I mean, give me a break, guys. Give me a break, you know, and or heavier words. But if we present solutions for earthly problems that make sense, and as being part of a culture,
yes,
then people suddenly feel, oh, this is very good, oh, this is very interesting, oh, very nice, yes. It is a fact that, like, for example, in the Vedic culture, there was in Ayurveda, there is the Sushruta Samhita. And in the Sushruta Samhita, there is a procedure for when a person has a fracture in a bone, they have some bandage with herbs, they put it around it, and then exactly on that bandage, a red line shows exactly where the fracture is. Well, that's better than x-rays. Eh? Give me that bandage rather than getting zapped under some material or machine. Right? You know, I mean, each time you get zapped, you get all these heavy side effects from it. Actually, they don't tell you, but you do. That's why the operator is behind a lead screen with a lead apron, you know. I mean, the operators, actually my sister did that job. Right? And she had, like, they were behind a lead screen, a lead apron, and they still had, like, badges to measure the radioactive exposure. Yeah. And then every once in a while, she had an overdose of radiation, and then they would give her a month off.
Great job.
Hmm. So a lot of people will say, hey, that makes sense. That sounds good, that bandage. Do you know more about it? Well, I don't, to be honest. But if somebody would, then that would be useful information. Useful information. And society would be impressed. Yes. So we have so much useful information for the world. And once they start to appreciate that, then Krishna will also follow. Then Krishna will also come. And it is in that way that we can reach out to people who have more interest in earthly things than in the spiritual things. So, for preaching, we should know something about that. At least enough to impress them a bit. Okay, so in this way, even for devotees, earthly affairs have some use. And Vedic culture has some answers. Now, any questions or comments?
Several things. The first one is to do colloidal silver and pure bacteria. Colloidal silver. The second thing is, it's only recently they put the barrels in concrete. For the first 40 years, they just dumped them in the ocean, no barrels. They're now washed out of the way, the nuclear barrels. And the third thing was, the Vedic culture is so good.
What happened was that in the age of Kali, the Brahmins fell down. It starts, of course, Bhagavatam begins with the fall down of Sringi, who curses Maharaj Pariksit, because he was puffed up, he became proud. So when the Brahmins became proud, that was the downfall of the Vedic culture. And then gradually, the Brahmins became so proud, they began to claim their Brahminical status by birthright, and everyone else was Sudra and fallen and untouchable. And, you know, and if a Sudra would have to come in a Brahminical area to do some of the maintenance service, he would have to ring a bell so that all the Brahmanas could go in the house so that the shadow of that Sudra would not touch the body of the Brahmana or the shadow of the Brahmana, you know, because even then he would be contaminated and have to take a bath and purify himself and fast and was not allowed to study scripture for some time. So in this way, smarter Brahmanism. And then these Brahmanas, they claim Brahminical status by birthright, and next thing is they focused on the Dharma Shastra, which is material Shastra, which is Upaveda, which is not actually eternal Vedic scripture. It is not dealing with the eternal goal of life. It's dealing with governing the material society. And then they began to just impose a very rigid culture in India. And gradually, for a long time, people tolerated it. But the lower castes were mistreated for centuries, maybe millennia, and at least 1,000 years. So at one point, and they swallowed it. But it became like too much. You know, if you want to see an illustration of it, you can look at the Tukaram movie, and you can see how, because Tukaram was from a Sudra caste, and how he was being mistreated by arrogant Brahmins. A very nice movie from like the 1930s. Yeah. You can see it on YouTube. And so much oppression that gradually they rebelled. And then, you know, then when the television came into India, it came via the Ramayana, and then everyone had the television. And then it started with Ramayana. Everyone was watching Ramayana. They bought televisions to see Ramayana. And the next thing was MTV. Yeah. MTV. And then with MTV, they saw all the rubbish of the world. And then India wanted it also. They wanted it also. But Indira Gandhi had blocked all this because she had blocked the import of so many Western things by putting like 400% tax on import, so that India's own market and industry could develop. But then Rajiv came, and Rajiv gave us Kruti and Maruti, right? then the Tamil Tigers, they got him, the LTTE, and they blew him to pieces, unfortunately, or whatever. And then Nrisimha Rao finished the job, right? Nrisimha Rao, he finished it, and he just brought Western culture. And then, you know, it's like India now, they want to be like modern. They want to be, you know, like the rest of the world. Like, you know, come on, you know, give us a break now. You know, this Vedic culture. We want to be like the rest of the world. And then, you know, like, I was in Connaught Circus in Delhi, the center, come with the Harinam, and people are looking at the Harinam. Do you have to do this here? Can't you see? We enjoy it. We're enjoying, and you have to bring your religion here in Connaught Circus. Please go away. Please, you know. We're enjoying our senses here. Go away, please. And then they come on New Year's Eve. Right? I came on New Year's Eve on Connaught Circus, and everyone, you know, the whole circus, which is a big circular road, jammed with cars, and the back door was flapped open, and people are sitting in the back, you know, and on the roof of the cars with bottles of whiskey. Right? Thousands of people, all with bottles, celebrating the new year. Right? I tell you, Vedic culture is no more. It's over. And it's like 30, in 19, 40 years ago, it is even. 1970, right, alcohol in Delhi could hardly be found. There were like little windows, like a post office window with bars, right, where certain people could, low class people could go and they could get some alcohol at a high price, tiny little bottle, but they had to show an ID and they had to write their name or put a thumbprint, right, in a register. But the government was monitoring. And in the same way, India has like ganja shops where you can just go and buy the ganja legally, but again, you know, like in the register and so on. And it's like for low class men. So alcohol and intoxication was there in society traditionally, but it was controlled. Well, now those days are gone. You know, now you go to Connaught Circus and celebrate New Year. Like, never seen anything like it, nowhere in the world. India wants to be like the rest. I was in 1975 in India when Indira Gandhi banned Coca-Cola. And it was a big thing, you know. I was also in India when Pepsi came back into India. And I remember, people used to brush their teeth with Pepsi. I tell you, no one would drink water. No water. Forget it, right? Pepsi. Even the Bhagavatam class, you know. Pepsi in the car. The whole country was just celebrating Pepsi because it was a symbol of now, you know. Now we also are modern and American. Okay. Maybe some responses from some of the representatives of India, if they want to. If I was wrong, you can correct me. If I said anything wrong, please correct me. Correct me. But because I lived there a long time, so I was there. I saw it. I was there with the whole change. So Vedic culture. Prabhupada said it's like, it's dead. Vedic culture is dead. But like an elephant. When an elephant is dead, it's still very valuable. So there are still valuable things that we can find in that. If we dig a little, we find some valuable things left over.
There's one other thing I want to ask as well. We're talking about the world, and if we had somebody wise, that they'd actually come and then they'd come to Krishna. Yeah. Well, the people do appreciate.
Okay, the farms. Well, I think the, you know, there are. If you want to do something heroic, right? There are maybe three areas where you can do something heroic. In China, right? There's so many people, so much to do in terms of preaching. Or in Africa, you know, we have only scratched the surface. If you want to do something heroic, go to Africa. You can talk to me after the lecture. Or if you want to, you know, do something heroic, go on a farm and live off the land. Don't go on a farm and sell paintings. See, that's what happened. People went on a farm and then they did paintings and stickers or sold, you know, some business, anything, you know, but making money from the land. But Prabhupada said, live off the land, make your own cloth, make everything you use, castor oil, and make for lamps, right? Basically become self-sufficient. Not immediately, step by step, gradually. He was not, again, it was not forbidden to use a tractor, but we knew it was temporary and the idea was get rid of them and go to his bulls. It takes heroes. Heroes are rare to come by. But one day when this crazy modern world will get into trouble, that day will come and that day will be forced to go back to the land. I saw an article in a newspaper, and it was about, it was typed, it was in a UK newspaper, and it was about a reluctant house husband. And basically what happened was that the man, he used to, you know, work in a company, this and that, corporate environment, and then somehow or other, due to recession, he lost his job. And he was trying to get a job, and he couldn't get one. Meanwhile, you know, he had been married for maybe 10 years, and, you know, had young kids, like, I don't know, 6 or 8, something like that. His wife, you know, used to work before the marriage, but when the kids came, she just gave up her job and full-time looked after the kids. But then, you know, because the savings were running out, what to do? So she tried to get a job. And she got hired straight away. And now, she's the breadwinner. And he, in the morning, you know, has to somehow or other, you know, get the kids to school and, like, you know, and then pick them up and then at home, you know, with, like, a nice cup of tea and some cookies and, you know, then yes, in between is to vacuum clean the house and, like, you know, get the cooking done and all these things. And he is totally fried. Totally fried. And she makes all the money. You know, it's like, and so for a while he went through depressions and this, that, drinking, on medication. Now he's sort of getting over that, but he's still hoping he'll get a job. It would be simple, you know. Just go on a block of land. Yeah? Get out of this crazy artificial corporate structure and just get on a block of land and everything would fall into place. And the wife also would prefer to look after the kids, you know, because after all the kids, I mean, where is mommy? Right? They still want mommy. And so as soon as you go on the block of land, everything starts to fall into place. But it takes a hero to do it.
I work here. You were comment about what you said about the Indian problems. Population explosion is the main thing. Why we need to change the setting?
Okay, Prabhupada said about overpopulation, that there is no overpopulation, that this is bogus. And it is a fact. My dear Mahatma, if anybody traveled a lot, it's the Swamis, right? No one argues with that, right? And I tell you, India is empty. It is empty. Everyone sits on each other's lip. They all sit on top of each other. There is so much land. So much vacant land. And Prabhupada put, and then you come to Australia. And they say,
Prabhupada said, like dogs, right? They're barking, barking. You cannot come in. They're barking. No, where is your visa? No, you cannot come in.
Vacant land. In India itself, there's lots of vacant land. Uncultivated land. Right? Prabhupada said, cultivate the land. Stop your cash cropping. Yeah? India, what is India's problem? Meat eating. Meat eating is the problem. And the animals eat 30 times as much grains as the human beings. So if you stop breeding so many animals for your food, you can eat that grains and feed 30 times more people. Overpopulation, rubbish, Mahatma. Rubbish. What?
Nuclear.
Yeah, India is also
really.
Yes.
And also in Japan.
Yeah, in Japan. And now China is building like 32 more. 32 new power plants in the same model as the Japanese one. Okay. And India is building a couple. And, you know, thank God, you know, thank they have a German society, a German agency that has cameras in all the reactors around the world, and that agency, the Germans, are watching all the nuclear reactors. I'm happy about that. Because, you know, in India it is, you know, chalega, chalega. Yeah? You see, no, it's saying it's like, Germans are the best for these things. Dangerous business. Dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Too much danger. But of course, our Bajpayee, he had an underground nuclear explosion to show Pakistan.
Pakistan.
And Prabhupada said that there's an insect who was being harassed by a wasp, and in his next life he became a wasp. So Prabhupada said, Indians who think too much about Pakistan, they become Pakistanis. Anything else, Matt? Thank you very much. Shilaprabhupada.
So it is Namakananda Swami Ki.